Hey, this is Colin Quinn. You're listening to Robert Kelly's podcast, You Know What Dude, on gloryholeradio.com.
That was good.
Pretty professional, huh?
Yeah, do one more.
Hey, this is Colin Quinn. You listen to Robert Kelly on You Know What Dude, his podcast. Hey, this is Colin Quinn. You're listening to You Know What Dude, Robert Kelly's podcast on gloryholeradio.com.
No, don't say my name.
Oh.
Just say You Know What Dude podcast.
Hey, this is Colin. Hey,
A little more peppy.
Hey, gang. This is Colin Quinn. You're listening to You Know What Dude on... It's the podcast. It's really quite pie, you cocksucker.
Don't tell me how to fucking read. I'm fucking doing this 20 fucking years. I'll fucking say what I want.
Hi, gang. It's Colin Quinn. You're listening to You Know What Dude on fucking Glory Hole. Whatever the fuck that is. Glory Hole Radio. Some homoerotic fucking name a couple of assholes came up with.
You know what, dude?
Hey, what's up? All right, this is an episode of You Know What Dude podcast. It's a late Wednesday night, a hot New York City summer night, and I'm here with, my original podcast friend, the great Colin Quinn.
You were ahead of your time with the podcasts.
We were.
Yeah, but I mean, it was your idea. I didn't even know what a damn podcast was at the time. You were ahead of the game. Now everybody's trying to do one.
You know, I say that, and people don't believe me. They think I'm just spouting bullshit, but it's true.
I know.
We used to do it on my phone. I used to call your house and record the phone call and put it up on MySpace.
Now everybody and his brother, even Danny Lobel, has a podcast.
Everybody has a podcast, and their Mark Maron, Joe Rogan... Billy Burr, Adam Carolla, Jay Moore just started one. It's like number one on the charts.
Greg Fitzsimmons.
Fitzy. Everybody. Eddie If has one with Jim Jeffries. The list goes on and on.
Yeah.
And I did it before.
And it keeps deteriorating as it goes on.
I did it back in the day.
Yep.
On my fucking phone,
mm-hmm.
The original iPhone, would call you up and use this service and, you know, and we'd just record it and it would go on MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Robert Kelly and sometimes Colin Quinn.
And you invented MySpace. Not invented it, but you predicted it.
Just so you know that Colin doesn't have mouth cancer, he's sucking on a popsicle.
I'm finished with a lovely popsicle. It's a hot night. There's nothing like a popsicle.
No, nothing.
They've come up with many inventions trying to recreate, but nothing satisfies you like a popsicle.
What are the other inventions?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that. That's a good question. Frozen yogurt.
Nope.
That's not gelato.
No, that's ice cream.
Well, I'm just saying they've come up with other things.
No, not a popsicle. Not a popsicle has a stick in it.
Oh, are the stick items? Well, this yogurt on a stick, gelato on a stick.
It's not gelato on a stick, you fucking cunt. There's no gelato on a stick. You can't have it. It's gelato.
All right.
But anyways, we did this shit back in the day, and if we had stuck with it, or if I had stuck with it, I should say, if we kept doing it, I think we'd probably have hundreds of thousands of listeners right now. And it all came to an end.
Yeah.
One day. I remember that day.
Mm-hmm.
A man called me up and said, hey, big fan of you and Colin Quinn, man. Amazing. And you guys are great. And I see that you're on the charts. It's like Dane Cook and P. Diddy and Madonna. And then you guys. You guys are like number 4 or 5 on the chart, and you know, that's pretty great. I'd love to pay you guys. I want to pay you guys cash. I want to give you guys some serious money to do it. All you have to do is once a week in the studio in New York City, and we're going to do it. Are you into it? I'd be like, yeah, let me call Colin. And then I called you, and I had a meeting set up for all three of us, and you got on the phone with the guy, and he was in his home cooking dinner for his little kids that he probably gets on maybe a couple days a week from his divorced wife. And they were just like, Daddy, Daddy's here, and he's cooking his dinner, mac and cheese and some chicken, and he picked up the phone to answer it, and you said, hey, Colin, how you doing?
Hey.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about this. I'd like to tell you what I was thinking, and you said...
I forget what I said.
No. Excuse me? No, I'm all set. You don't need to go into it. I'm not doing it. Is there any way that I could, you know, you just give me a chance to give you my pitch? And no, that'd be senseless, pointless. I'm not doing it, no matter what you say. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Bye. Now we're number 78 on the charts.
And that's how I got my nickname, the White Patrice O'Neal.
Yeah, what are you going to do? What we're going to do is right after Tough. You were doing that shit after Tough Crowd.
Yeah. Tough Crowd.
That was a good response. Yeah. That's how hot it is. It's hot. We're both tired. Yeah. We're both in mini depressions.
Yeah.
I put a Reese's on the table. Not a regular Reese's, a Reese's bar. It's actually a big bar. And I just put it there and I left it there in front of you. I didn't ask if you wanted it.
Like a raccoon.
And you lasted 8 minutes. That was pretty good.
No, I was just staring, warming up for it. Yeah. Still some left.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, it is a hot one. Getting ready for Montreal next week.
Oh, my God. You excited?
Yeah, I kind of am in a way.
Really?
I like Montreal. It's a beautiful town.
I used to hate it.
You did?
When I wasn't in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they wouldn't pick you, and I audition.
It's the worst.
It's the worst. You audition. Did you ever audition for it?
I think I did. But anyway, they didn't pick me. Even if I didn't audition for it, I still didn't get picked for it. You know, like some people just get invited all the time.
Right.
Some people in the business seem to get invited to everything. Some people seem to get invited to nothing. I feel like people have the impression that I get invited to everything, but I feel like the reality is I don't get invited to much comparable to where people would think I would get invited to things. Like Montreal.
Right, Montreal.
I've been invited once in, you know, 20-something years I'm in the comedy, you know.
Well, twice now.
Now twice, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I stopped auditioning. I told Frosty, I was like, I don't want to do audition for any more festivals. I don't want to do it. It's just, I don't need to do it. They're not going to pick me. I don't need it. I just don't need to do it. I'll just go do something else. I'll just go become better as a comic.
Yeah.
And I'll just focus. And then I got all of them in this, like the same, like once one picture, the other one's picture. And then now I'm in with Montreal. I did the Nasty Show the first time, and I went back and did it again, and I did that tour. I fucking love it. Fucking love it. It's a fucking blast. And they
great.
And they treat you right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a... it's fucking cool, and the crowds are fucking great, you know, in Canada for some reason. There's a different vibe up there for comedy.
Yeah, you do a lot of gigs up in Canada.
I do. I did a lot with Dane, and then I did a lot with Montreal Fest, just for laughs. But I did that tour across Canada last year. It was fucking great. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And the crowds are fucking great.
Yeah, they are great. I mean, I only did Toronto, but I love Toronto. I love doing gigs there.
Toronto?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I just like the crowds. What are you laughing at?
I don't know. It's just usually... I don't know.
What? What the fuck are you laughing at?
I'm just laughing that you're a little monotone tonight.
What am I usually, Mr. Enthusiasm? Like, hey, the crowds are sensational. What am I known for? My fucking
this is my,
effervescence, yeah. My ebullience.
Say ebullience again.
Ebullience.
You know I don't know what that fucking means. Say it again.
What the
Say
hell is
again.
Your problem?
I'll fucking throw one of my dogs at you. Don't fucking use ebullience. You know I don't like those stupid words.
They're not stupid words.
They're
descriptive words.
Unnecessary words. How's that?
Well, unnecessary. Well, you could say unnecessary is a word. An unnecessary word.
Unnecessary is a word.
You could say it's an unnecessary word.
Well, that's not what you
said. Gary Goldman just told me tonight you used a word. Some word. What the hell was it? I can't remember. When you met him, were you like, it's fuck, I can't remember.
That was good.
All right, go on. Let's get back to business.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, you're up there doing the festival. You're doing your show.
Right.
Colin's one-man show.
Yeah.
Which is called?
Long story short.
But it's, yeah. And it's...
I'm doing that for two nights at some theater. Will you stay at the Grand Hyatt? We don't say where we're staying?
No. You don't say where you're staying.
What, because there's stalkers?
Well, I mean, you don't want to give out the fucking hotel you're staying at.
In case the serial killers listen to the podcast.
Well, we don't have stalkers. Comics don't have stalkers.
Yeah, but I bet there's a lot of... If I was a killer, if I was a psycho, I'd listen to podcasts and then find out. Well, you know what I mean.
Me and you are as close to fucking serial killers as you can get without the bodies.
There's bigger psychos than us.
Who?
Daryl Hammond.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the rage to back it up.
No, he doesn't. You're right.
He doesn't have the rage. He has, if we had his brain and he had our rage, if you put those together, you get a serial killer.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not crazy. I mean, he's not like...
No, physically. He's more like turns on himself. I can't see him holding up in a building and killing others.
No, he'd never.
And we turn on ourselves, but, you know, we'd like to turn on others.
Yeah, I have. I you know what's funny is I just watched a movie called, I think it was called The End. There's two movies called, I actually watched two movies on Netflix called The End. One with Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds, I know that one.
Which is fucking funny. Burt Reynolds has the best laugh in the business.
Yeah, he does.
The fucking best laugh in the business. And Dom DeLuise, again, I talk about him a lot on the fucking podcast. That scene when he's the mental patient, when he comes in, when Bert wakes up in the insane asylum, and he's sitting next to him, it's fucking hilarious. He is...
Oh, they were great together.
Comic fucking genius.
They were great.
He's awesome. But there's another movie called The End about the London mob guys, the South End.
The Cray brothers and all those guys?
No, not those guys. A bunch of other guys. And it's just this daughter of one of the guys interviews all these guys.
Oh, it's a real documentary.
And
I'd like to see that.
It's fucking great. It's called The End. It's on Netflix. It's fucking crazy. These guys these guys talk about, they all have a list. Like, if I get cancer, I'm taking everybody.
Oh.
Like one of the guys even says it. He goes, I get cancer. There's a few people that are coming with me. They're coming. They're coming with me. I'm just going to whack them out. I don't give a shit. They're fucking dying.
Yeah, I can see. I can understand it. You know what I mean?
I can understand.
I don't think I would do that, but you never know.
I'm not as angry as I was 5-6 years ago.
Right.
For some reason, it went away. I think because I'm happier in my life.
Yeah.
I think once I got happier in my relationship with my wife.
Yeah.
And it may sound as gay as it sounds, when you actually fall in love with somebody or you let yourself, you know,
be loved and
There's something that your trust and your fucking rage kind of goes away a little bit. But I mean, it's still there. I'm still a psychopath.
Yeah.
I walk down the street and I play out scenarios in my head. All the time.
Yeah, me too.
Like I do these little fantasies all the time.
Me too.
Yeah. I play them out in full.
Yeah.
Very quick, very fast. They're, you know, seconds long, but I from the beginning to end, I have these fantasies where I fucking grab somebody, throw them to the ground and punch them in the fucking face and don't you fucking do that. If I'm walking with my wife, I'm not really enjoying the walk as much as she is, because if we're out late in New York City, what if this guy, who's that guy, what if this motherfucker, if this guy, you know, if these people say something,
yeah,
I'm ready to fucking attack somebody at all the time.
But that's normal. I mean, that's logical.
It's logical. And
late at night in New York City.
If you were a Navy SEAL, it would
be
logical.
But I'm saying late at night in New York City, it's not a bad way to be on point. There's nothing more annoying if you're with your girlfriend, right? Your wife. And I doubt Dawn does this, but like sometimes I'd be out with girlfriend, wife, you know, over the years.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're walking down the street, you see some shady bastards. You realize you're probably going to have to, or like you said, you're thinking ahead, uh-oh, something's going to have to happen. And suddenly the girlfriend or wife starts like holding you to where you're like, listen, get off me. I'm going to have to fight in a minute. You're holding me where these guys, I have a package in one hand. I got you. And it's like, we're not on a meander through the fucking, you know, some beach. You know, it's like, you see where we are? You see what's going on behind me?
Yeah.
Let me go so I can defend you and myself right now.
But here's the thing is, if you said that to her, she'd be like, you're crazy.
Right.
We're fine.
Right.
Stop. And she's 99% of the time, she's probably right. But that 1%?
1%, you want to be ready. And these guys look and they see if you're ready too.
Yeah, I mean, every time my wife goes out and walks the dogs, I have little fantasies. And they're specific, like the guy, what happens, right. I hear my name, and then I know what I'm going to grab on the way out the fucking door.
Of course,
door.
You always know where your weapons
and,
are.
And I know what I'm going to do when I get out there. I'm going to fucking, hey, what's going on? I'm going to be nice. Like, hey, dude, why don't you let, that's my wife. And yeah. Then I'm going to try to just get close, and then I'm going to fucking bash the fuck away.
You know what? All your weapons are at all times, you know?
Yeah, I know where they are.
Just like me, even the slingshot you gave me, one of my favorite weapons. I'm always playing with that.
Well, that's from fucking 1,000 years ago. I don't know if that's the best option.
No, but I love the slingshot.
Yeah.
And that knife, you know, I have all my knives and the hatchets knife. And bats. When I was a kid, I tell you about that one time we were sitting there. I was sitting in my window. I look out. Guy's robbing a car on my block. I just see him go walk over, punch out a window of a station wagon. This guy, Lenny, that lived across the street. Yeah. Just, you know, I didn't know him well. I go to my friends. Oh, shit. Look. You know, rolling in, getting high. 17. I go out there with my hatchet. I bust down the block. This guy sees me coming. You know, he sees the door open. I guess he was watching. He starts tailing. He knows we're up to something. My friends are behind me. I shoestring catch him. Shoestring. He goes falling down. Catch him. And a couple of guys grab him. He's got this giant long butcher knife on him.
Jesus.
And Lenny comes over. Here's the worst part of the story. Lenny comes over the next day to our friends. We had our leader. And he goes to the leader of our friends. Hey, man, thank you. Doesn't even thank me. I'm the one that made the shoestring grab.
You're not the leader.
I'm not the leader. And then the saddest part was about July 4th, I went back to Brooklyn. My friend was having a party.
Yeah.
Everyone's telling the story, and they're going, remember that time when that guy was robbing the car? And they mentioned another guy, and Jimmy caught him. And I mean, everybody's like, yeah. They all start going over the story, and I'm sitting there going, no. I caught him. And I could tell nobody really, they're just looking like, this asshole, he's bad enough, he's in comedy. Aren't you successful enough? You have to take credit for Jimmy's catch. I'm like, no, my catch, and I'm the one that spotted him because it was out my window. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Why did you have a hatchet?
But then another time I'm running up the block with my hatchet.
Do you have a hatchet?
Well, I'm saying you always have weapons, so I forget where the hatchet came from.
I've never had a hatchet.
You know, it was like some little, I forget where it came from, but I had the hatchet and I used to sit in my window and I stayed up all night then. That's why I became a comedian too. I was a late night guy and I'd sit there in my window in my underwear and hot days. You know, nobody uses AC in those days, right?
You had a fan.
Sitting there in a tidy whities. Another time I saw another guy breaking in the house. I go running out with the hatchet again. Run up the corner. The cops pull up. I go, he went that way. I'm sitting there with a tighty whities and a hatchet. Of course, they immediately grab me, throw me on the ground, start cuffing me. I'm like, no.
Do you understand, though, how hard it would to use a hatchet on somebody? Do you understand? Do you understand how hard it is to hit somebody with a hatchet?
I think it's easier to hit somebody in the head with a hatchet. I mean, as far as, are you talking about the mental or the physical difficulty?
The mental difficulty to swing a hatchet and hit somebody's head with it. Okay, like, okay, hitting somebody with a stick or a bat, not that hard.
Right.
You swing it, it's like basically extension of your arm.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting somebody would be easier. Stabbing somebody is harder.
It's harder.
Than actually shooting somebody.
Right.
Because you actually have to stick it in them.
Yes.
And that psychologically, and then hatchet is beyond that. Because a hatchet, unless you have fucking Indian blood in you, to hit somebody with a hatchet, dude, is fucking that's crazy.
I think stabbing somebody is crazier than
a hatchet. Yeah. Are you fucking a hatchet is because stabbing a hatchet. And a hatchet
stabbing them with a bat.
It's a stabbing somebody with a bat. Okay, it's way harder.
Because
when you hit somebody with a hatchet, the wound that you're going to cause is, and you're going to have to pull it out. I mean, Jesus.
Speaking of great weapons and pulling it out, what about that Afghani knife I got? Hood's wife now,
right,
was Afghani. So her father was like an ambassador to Afghanistan.
Right.
So powerful that 3 weeks after 9/11, she comes back on a plane with this giant, like, Afghani Bowie knife for me. You know what I mean? She just got it for me. And it's this old school knife, but the way the Afghanis fight, you don't just stick it in them. It's got a jagged edge on the bottom part, so when you pull it out, it catches.
Oh.
So not only you stab it
back up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the most brutal thing. It just goes to show, like, all the modern weaponry, and, you know, these guys are warriors, you know, in their own way. You know what I mean? Like, even though they're, like, low tech, it's scary. It must be scary for our troops over there. I remember hearing about Russia years ago, about the Russian troops and how they never wanted to be caught alive because the Afghanis just had all these, like, primitive torture things. They'd skin them alive.
Yeah.
They'd put ants on them. They'd put all kinds of shit on them and just, you know what I mean, sodomize them and then just slowly rip out their insides.
Well, it's not all that bad, then.
What's that? They rip their insides out.
Get a little sex.
But I'm just saying that they never wanted to get caught. And that was one of the demoralizing things about fighting the Afghanis, apparently, was that a lot of the soldiers were like, it's too brutal. These guys live to fight.
I think if I was brought up in a different, if I was brought up in wartime where I had to be drafted or something, you know, because any war that I was right after the Vietnam.
Right.
I was, you know, too old to go to fucking Iraq, the first one and the second one.
Right.
But if I was brought up in war where I had to got drafted, I would have went into I would have went right into the Marines. I would have went into tried to be special. I would have went over and just fucking killed people. I think I have that in my head.
Yeah.
Like where I could go over there and just shoot motherfuckers.
You definitely would have. I think I would have been.
Stop. No, you would have been right next to me. Air Force. Oh, God. You wouldn't have fit in the jumpsuit, first of all. All right. There's no way you would have been Air Force. Have you seen how small the jet plane seats are? Go to the Intrepid.
They are very slender boys, the Air Force.
Dude, I went over to the Intrepid the other day with my nephew, and you can't. I would have never been able to have been a pilot. They would have had to make a different plane
really
for me.
They really are small.
Small people, man. Those little jet fighters.
They're like movie actors. They are the big movie stars are delicate boned like Tom Cruise. Like, they're really delicate.
Small guys.
Small boned people.
Small boned. I think that. I wonder if that's why I haven't made it.
Because you're not small boned enough?
I'm just not petite enough. Yeah. Everybody that I know that is famous.
They're petite.
Guys. I love that show Justified on FX.
I've never seen
it. With Timothy Olyphant.
Olyphant.
Yeah. Thin little dude. On TV, he looks shredded. Big guy.
Right. They do seem more shredded on TV.
You know, but then if me on TV, maybe I'm too big.
What about the time we went to, speaking of flying, we went to Iraq and then we're in the plane and they told us this is what'll happen if you get shot at. And then it happened where all those alarms go off, and I'm sitting there with Steve Byrne.
Yeah.
And I turn around and look at him. I go, Steve. And he thought, we were getting attacked. We're going to die. All the things came down. Remember all the alarms?
Yeah.
I go, Steve. I'm looking right in the eye. We're in those headsets. I go, at least I made it. With you, we'll never know.
You said that?
And he just looked at me like this.
How about in the back of the plane? Because I didn't get picked to go to the front. because that's the story of my life. Because Tracy picked Steve, because Steve Burns is a hugger, and he's a nice guy. And I'm apparently too, my energy was just too fucking shitty. I didn't get picked for anything on that fucking trip. Steve, Colin, you, she didn't want to pick you either. Don't laugh.
Hey.
If you weren't fucking,
I was the leader.
You were the leader, but if she could have fucking told you to go fight, she would have just picked Steve.
Of course, Steve's the, plus his brother was over there.
Right. Well, Steve has the ability to be normal.
And he's a hugger, like you said.
Yeah, he's a normal
guy. He's like,
guy.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, what's up? I don't have that ability.
I'll tell you one thing. Steve gave me a beautiful picture. It's still up in my apartment today of me from the back performing in front of all these troops outdoor at night.
I took that fucking photo. You fucking piece of shit. You just told that fucking hatchet story, and it still bugs you, and then you fucking rework it into me? I took that fucking picture.
He took the picture, but Steve sent it to me. And I was like, about 3 months later, I go, yeah, this great picture. Remember? Because I didn't know. And he goes, I go, it's a great picture. You know, Steve's, he goes, I took that fucking picture. He took it. But I thought it was from Steve because Steve sent it to me, remember?
Yeah, because Steve's a, fuck again. I'm in the back of the plane sitting next to a bunch of Marines because I'm in the, you know, I don't get to go up front. Ugh. I hate when I'm out somewhere and something like that too, when I try to change the core of who I am,
right?
Just to have people like me. That's one of those trips where I tried to change who I was.
Right.
I tried to be smile more or be more friendly or open up because I just wanted to be treated better.
Yeah.
And it just did. It still doesn't work.
No.
It still. But I was in the back and the flares. What happens is you're in the C-130 and the flares start shooting off. We were landing in Fallujah to pick up ammunition and other comics that were doing some other tour. And the flares went off. And I actually was like, oh, man, that's beautiful, to the guy next to me. I was like, that's beautiful, man. Look at the sun. And he leaned over. He goes, that's not the sun. Someone just shot a rocket at the plane. I literally leaned over to him. I go, hey, could you show some fucking emotion if we're going to fucking get a... I was so angry. Like, you really? You're that fucking calm?
Oh.
I was like, dude, if I'm fucking dying...
Yeah.
I want to
know about it.
I flip out on a fucking roller coaster, never mind going down on a plane in Fallujah. I want to scream. Oh. I want to yell. I want to ask for forgiveness. I want to fucking do my thing before I die. I'm not going down. I'm not a fucking soldier.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, that was a good time. But that was, how long ago was that? 7 years ago?
Yeah.
Longer.
Yeah.
Maybe eight.
Maybe seven and a half, eight. It's crazy, huh?
It's kind of, it's fucked up. I mean, tough crowd, man. That was fucking the shit.
Yeah.
It's two, what was it, blocks away from your house?
Yeah.
Blocks away from my house.
Yeah.
It was a fucking four days a week.
Yep. Yeah.
It was the shit.
It was. It was one of those things that definitely was, you know, they definitely have done nothing like that.
Well, they've tried. I mean, Byron Allen picked it up after.
Yeah.
Tried to do his thing that's still running.
Right.
Chelsea Handler pretty much does the same shit.
Yeah.
That's a tough crowd, if you ask me.
Right. So.
That's a tough crowd. I mean, it's not as...
Can we erase the part where I said they've never done nothing like that before then?
Well, we can erase that part and then the part about the popsicles.
Yeah.
We can do that.
The,
But it's... And they never put it on fucking DVD either.
I know.
Does that bug you?
Yeah. It does bug me.
Do you think it's because it would cost too much money to put that many episodes on? You can't really do something like that. It's not like it was a once a week show.
Right.
It was 4 days a week for 2 years. That'd be a lot of fucking episodes.
They could have put the best of
on a DVD.
Maybe, right?
I mean
it's too late now. Nobody even buys fucking DVDs, but...
Well, you could put it on iTunes.
Yeah.
Have you ever even tried to talk to him about it?
Yeah, my agent and manager at the time tried to talk to him about it. But they were like, oh, we just don't do like this. What you said, they were like, oh, we don't do daily shows like that, or we don't put them out like that, you know.
What about now? What about trying to do it now?
Yeah.
As maybe a fucking anniversary or something.
Right.
Because that fucking... I mean, if you look at that show, the reason why that show was so fucking brilliant is because, yeah, you were the... it was your show.
Yeah.
But you know, at any point, anybody could kind of take over and go at it and do it, say what they want and do what they want.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, Chelsea Handler, where it's like she's the queen fucking bee and everybody else is just trying to get their jokes in.
And, right.
You know.
No, I took a lot of unwarranted abuse on that show. I'd be in the middle of the show trying to be the host, and then people like making fun of my legs, calling me cancer stick legs, deer legs, yeah, telling me shut up.
Yeah.
You know, but that was part of the charm, like you said. Part of the charm was people would try to, when anybody would go on there and try to be like, I'm going to win over the crowd, everybody would just turn on them because we know all the tricks because we're comedians too.
How about the time I had notes and Patrice grabbed them and threw them away?
Oh.
Because people had notes.
Yeah.
You'd write jokes for the show.
Yeah.
Except for certain people, like Patrice.
Like Patrice.
He would just go on.
And he grabbed, well, go on and on. I mean, this guy was, he literally would hold the floor like, you know, like a fucking filibustering senator in the 1890s and shit. He's just up there. He wouldn't shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people really had a problem with that.
Really?
Yeah.
What, like behind the scenes?
Yeah. A lot of comedians are like, what the fuck, man? Was that guy? But, you know, you can't help it. You know how Patrice is. Patrice is one of those guys, you know, when he gets to you, you just can't help it. You know what I mean? There's no reason to love him because he'll just fucking turn on you, but you can't help it. If you love Patrice, you just love him.
Yeah,
he's one of those guys, and his fans are the same way. It's like you'll sit there and listen to bullshit, and at the end of it, he comes up with some twist, and you're like, Jesus Christ, that was well worth the trip.
Yeah.
But the problem with Patrice was he thought it was his show, but it was my show.
Really?
Well, I mean, sometimes I'd be on there, and I felt like we were the guests, and he was the host. You know what I'm saying?
I waited too long to eat my popsicle. It melted.
It melted?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, like sometimes I'd literally be sitting there, and I'd feel like that was the center.
Right.
And I was one of the guests. I mean, I would literally feel that way. That's part of his charm.
Was there any show, let me ask you this question, was there any show that you fucking hated?
Of that show?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty.
There's no show that you remember that. Just this fucking,
I'm sure there were plenty. I just can't remember any offhand. Well, I remember feeling sick to my stomach a lot, you know.
Really?
Well, just because, you know, I felt like there was pressure from that, you know. I just felt like at the beginning, I felt like this is going to be everything I wanted to be. Spontaneous, honest, you know, just get more and more honest and more spontaneous. And then somewhere I felt like, and I can't just blame it on the network, but I blame them partially. But I also say I lost, you know, the sense, even though I enjoyed it, I lost the sense of, you know, like that, you know, of I lost my focus on certain areas of it. You know what I mean? You know, but I mean, I still loved it. But I mean, towards the end, it just started to get a little out of control. You know what I mean? But it was still a unique thing, and it could have really gone places, you know.
But why did it fucking end? Why did it fucking get taken off?
Well, I mean, they took it off because they felt like, they said it was the ratings, and maybe it was, but I mean, it was also like they didn't like the direction it was getting. You know, it was, I feel like my whole thing is, I feel like they were getting a lot of people saying that show is racist. Not fans, not average people. People come up to me all this time in the street, black people, white people, anybody, Puerto Ricans, Asian. Oh, I love that show. It's like me and my friends is the way people really talk.
Right.
But I feel like the industry, whatever that means, was kind of like, that show is very mean-spirited. That show has a lot of racial, it shows awfully, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it offended sensibilities, you know, that of a lot of people in that would get, that had the ear of Comedy Central, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what happened.
So how did it end? What was the day it ended?
It was right, I don't know the day, but I know it was right, it was this, like, November 1st, I think, 7 years ago. This November will be 7 years. 7 years, it's a long time.
What, they just call you into a room?
No, they called me like a couple of months before that, and they were like, we had this big meeting, and they're like, well, you know, talking about all the stuff. The racial stuff is really, you know, that's, Dave Chappelle covers all racial stuff. I go, what?
I said, you can't have two people covering racial stuff. That's interesting, you know. And they're like, I go, and they go, you talk about politics a lot. Should we have Jon Stewart covering politics? I was like, what? What do you want us to talk about? They go, we like it to be more like, you know, topics like celebrity topics. I go, really? You want me to stand on stage with Nick DiPaolo and Patrice O'Neill staring at me and go, hey, fellas, what do you think about this Paris Hilton thing that's going on? I said, they'll tear me apart. I won't even make it to the second question. So I feel like
they want it to be pop culture.
They say they did, but I just think they want us to avoid the brutal discussions that we were having about race, you know?
Right.
The brutal honesty of that. And then, and I believe you were on the one show. There was one episode. First of all, the fact that they would never let the black comedians use the N-word on our show. They used it, but then they'd bleep them. Well, in the Chappelle show, they would say it 70 times.
Well, that's the famous story Patrice talks about where he had talking about the D.C. sniper. Right. And he's like, you know, it's a serial killer. And all the news was like, it's a white guy and a white male.
Right.
Mid to, you know, late 30s. And,
right.
And, you know, because serial. And then he goes, and then it was just a nigger and a Buick.
Hilarious.
And they beep nigger and let him. And they no, they beep Buick, but they let him say nigger on your show.
On my show?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was that one episode. We had one episode where we said...
They didn't want him to say Buick was the fight.
That's funny.
He was like, I can't say Buick, but you're going to let me say nigger?
But that goes against my whole point. My whole point is that they wouldn't even let...
That's true.
But what happened was, you were on the episode, I believe, where we said, look, you know, I said, you guys can't have Chappelle's show, they say nigger 70 times a show. Yeah. Our show, the black comedians are bleeped from saying it. Yeah. That's weird.
Right.
Because we're a white show or something. We're on 2 hours later.
Right.
That's when you get more time. You're more permissive at that hour.
Right.
You're bleeping the black comedians.
Yeah.
And that's weird. But anyway, you know, once again, these decisions get made of these ultra sensitive people who are worried, you know, defending people that don't need their defense, who don't want it, you know. But anyway, so then one episode I go, they go, okay, fine. This episode, because the episode was about the word nigger. That was what the episode was about. So I said, you can't bleep us this episode. And then the censor goes to me, look, okay, you know, we're not going to bleep you this time for this episode, but try to tell people to keep it, you know, try not to, you know, abuse it. I go, okay, fine. I go on with this in mind. I told all you back, you were on this episode.
Yeah.
I remember.
Okay.
When I tell you, I told everybody, you know, just try to keep it reasonable. They're letting us say it, guys. Like, I was actually innocently, once again, every episode, I was foolish enough to think that you assholes were listening to a word I said. I go, this is actually good, so let's try to keep it. You, Patrice, I forget who else, probably DiPaolo, somebody. I mean, when I say every other, even by the end of the show, I was like, oh, everybody said it. It had to be like 1,000. I mean, it had to be a couple of hundred times.
Really?
It was unbelievable. It was like a gut. It was unbelievable. It was like Lil Wayne combined with fucking Jay-Z. It was like the hip-hop summit. It was unbelievable. It was hip-hop summit meets Klan rally. And I'm sitting there the whole time. I'm going, and right at the end, and you went on a run with it too. I remember. That's what I remember. You went on a run, and I was just sitting there going, and then afterwards, the censor comes up to me. Well, I said, I swear to God, I told them. But that was the beauty of Tough Crowd. Like, even when, you know, I would try to be in charge, you know, it was just be out of control because people just didn't give a shit. Because everybody's being honest and spontaneous, which is what everybody claims they want on TV. And
you
yet,
can't.
You know, you can't.
You can't. You can't.
They don't really want that.
No.
They want fake spontaneity and fake honesty.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just had to write out my act for Montreal. I had to write it out word for word. And
in French.
Yeah, right. It sucks. You're sitting there going, what is this?
Yeah.
This isn't what I fucking signed on for.
I know.
And then, you know, even if you want to do Letterman, you know, you got to have fucking Eddie Brill follow you around.
That's right.
And say, don't say that. Try it. And it's like, what the fuck is this?
I know.
I mean, am I funny? Do you want me on the show?
Speaking of which, tell me not to sidetrack for a second. Tell my favorite story about you trying to write your act out to go to India before anybody's. This is before anybody's really even doing Europe that much.
Yeah.
And him and Keith Robinson, guy comes and sees you guys, right? With one of the Indian comics.
Well, no, Matt Frost sold the gig. He got us to Amsterdam. The whole gig starts out with Amsterdam. And I'm sitting in a room at this agency that I just signed with. And who's the white comic that talks about Hot Pockets?
Hot Pockets.
Yeah. White guy, really white guy, who kind of whispers.
Brian Regan?
No, whiter than that.
I know who you're thinking of.
The fuck? He's really big. He's done a lot of shit. What's his name?
Fuck.
Anyways, we're in the room with him. And I tell him, hey, I'm going to Amsterdam. And he immediately calls Frosty. And tries to get me. He's flipping out of Frosty because he's not on the gig. And he tries to get me bumped off this gig. Okay? So then Frosty calls me. Dude, you got to keep your mouth shut. You know, you got to stop. I'm working on this gig and I got I'm working on this thing in India. I got this thing where you're going to go right from Amsterdam, you and Keith Robinson. You're going to go to India for a month. It's thousands of dollars. You're going to be in 5-star hotels.
Kyle Cease.
No.
Go ahead.
Older than that. And it's amazing. You're going to go all over India, but it's going to be, he goes, it's great. The money's great. You're gonna, and over there, you're going to be a millionaire because a dollar American at the time was like 10 million.
And nobody
million
has
rupees.
Done comedy in India at that time.
Nobody.
No Americans, really.
Yeah. So, anyways, we're in Amsterdam, me and Keith, and we're fucking, you know, doing these gigs, and the lady calls Matt and says, we need them to just write their acts out. 10-minute acts. Yeah. 10, 15 minutes. Write out the jokes you're going to do, word for word, because there's censor police in India that will be at the shows. And if you say anything against the government or the God or whatever, they stop the show. You get arrested. That's it. Everybody gets in trouble.
Yeah.
So we just had to write out our acts. So I'm in my room. I'm walking out. I come out. Keith comes out with his. I go, dude, we got to write out these acts, man. We got to get this shit done today. It has to be in today. He comes out. He goes, I did it. I got it. He's got a wrinkled up piece of notebook paper written in pencil with the edges still on where he ripped it out of the notebook. That's what he's going to send in to Matt. He's going to fax it in. I go, dude, you got to type it out. You can't do this. And this is just when internet. I go, I'm going to an internet cafe, which he didn't know even existed. And I go, and I bring him with me, pay the money. We sit him down at a fucking typewriter. With one index finger, he's typing out his whole act. One, not two. Wasn't even smart enough to use both index fingers. Used one with his glasses, looking down at the keyboard, fucking getting frustrated. Needless to say, we didn't get the fucking shit in. He didn't get his dumb stuff in. It wasn't correct. Canceled. Done.
That reminds me when I had Tough Crowd. I had Keith and Norton writing on the show at the beginning, just for the pilot.
Right.
Keith, Norton, Sherrod.
How did that fucking happen?
And somebody else.
You really hooked me up, too, by the way. You really tried to send in a writing. You made me do writing submission after writing submission.
They were good ones.
Well, they were all right. I mean, you can tell me honestly now, but they sucked.
No, I think they were good. Something happened. But anyway.
Well, I want to get into that after.
All right. I would walk into the office, Norton and Keith sitting there, literally like these are guys, young comics, not that old, you know, and they looked like MTA employees in their late 50s. They'd both be taking naps. Their feet would be up. They'd be like, you know, just porno on the computer. And, you know, it was just the beginning of, like, the porn on the computer. And just, and I would just look and be like, how could you do this to me? Yeah. It was just unbelievable. It was, just what you said. It reminded me of it because Sherrod and all of them just submitting ideas, like, on paper instead of, like, typed. You know, there's guys that may not have their ability, some young nerdy writer.
Not as funny.
But they're typing shit out. They're working all hours, rewrite. These guys, typically only comedians. This is what I love and hate about comedians, is that they just hand you the idea like, yeah, man, make something out of it. We all know it's going to be funny. I thought of it.
And they're treating me like I'm going to go, guys, but I'm a comedian too. I'm an arrogant asshole just like you. Don't hand me this paper like I'm going to go, oh my God, yes. That's what I used to always say to Patrice and Keith. I go, stop acting like I'm your white manager. I'm a comedian too. I have an attitude problem too. I don't know if you noticed. But yet when you guys get around me, you hand me shit like, why don't you take charge? Like they used to always try to get us to go on tour. Them and Norton too. We want to do a tour. I go, great, so do I. So set it up. I go, no, I'm not a booker. I'm just like you. I'm a comedian. I'll be on the tour. Just like set it up. Fuck you. Set it up. Fuck you. Set it up. How's that? And we never went on tour.
You did a little couple of them.
Did we?
They did.
They did, yeah.
They did.
But it's like, once again, you're trying to set... like, they wanted me to do all this other shit. Like, just because suddenly I'm the grown-up because it's my show? Fuck you.
Well, here's the
thing. I don't have my shit together. I've proven that now, but at the time, everybody thought I did.
Well, you did. You did have your shit together, dude. You fucking... you fucking... wrote your own monologue every day.
I could do that. Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, you didn't have any help.
No, not for the monologue.
I don't understand that.
Why would I do that? I'll tell you why. Here's how deluded I was. This is how fucking deluded I was. I was like, well, I know Dennis Miller used to write his own monologue when he had that show.
Right.
And then when he put out the books, I heard he had problems where some of his writers were like, hey, we wrote most of these jokes.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to give these guys a break. I'll write my own monologue. So when I put out my books, we all know how they've turned out. There won't be any legal problems. Nobody will have to worry because I wrote my own monologues.
Right. So you were looking ahead.
Looking ahead. A little too far ahead.
A little too far ahead. What if, I mean, tough crowd though. If that was a hit, if that was a moneymaker, if that was a fucking one of the big ones, I mean, like The Daily Show is, or like Chappelle could have been.
Right.
That would have been a fucking game changer for you. I mean, you would have been set for life.
Sure, totally.
Does that fuck with you?
But it didn't until you phrased it that way just now. Before that, I was fucking resigned to it. But you're like, if that was it, I was like, shit, shit. Shit. But yeah, I mean, I've thought about it. Of course I have. I also thought like creatively of the evolution. Like I used to think of all these ideas to film people, like all the comedians at the beginning, and keep filming them, and then over the years go back and see what you were like and see what you were fucking talking about, you know, just backstage and shit. And I just had all these creative ideas for the show that was kind of, you know, like I had a bunch of ideas, but when I got pulled, I was like, shit, man. And, you know, all these years, I mean, it's almost 7 years, but, you know, all these years, I was always like, you know, it takes a long time for the shit to sink in with me, you know?
Yeah.
Because my career was such that I'd always come back after a couple of years. And even this time, I'm sure you and everybody else was like, well, he'll probably come back with something else because I'm always writing and I always have these pitch meetings. But the fact they haven't come back in 7 years, and it's like, you know what I mean? It's like strange to me in that, you know, like I wanted to have all the shows then, the variations on Tough Crowd or whatever, you know?
Now, there was one thing that fucking surprised me is that you just didn't bring it somewhere else or a variation of something else to HBO or Showtime where...
Well, I told you a genius, Jim Norton, right when the end of the show, he helpfully goes to me, you should try to think if you can bring this to HBO or FX or something. Mm-hmm. Did you ever think of that? And I was like, no, Jim, I never thought of bringing it to another network. How fucking brilliant. But of course I tried, you know what I mean? But
no one took.
Nobody wanted.
Why?
That's the question. There's many, you know, theories on why, but...
Well, you've been writing for the last fucking 7 years after Tough Crowd. You've been writing movie scripts and TV shows.
Yeah.
But not comedy shows like Tough Crowd or something like that. You've been writing actually, you know...
Because you couldn't write Tough Crowd anyway.
Right. And then you were writing your one-man show for the last couple of years. Yeah. Well, actually longer than that because it started in your stand-up.
Right.
And then you formed it into a one-man show.
I did my other one-man show, which is Dawn Saw, the economy show.
Oh, that was a different show?
Totally different show. Right, Dawn?
Yep.
Dawn doesn't talk on the podcast, Colin.
Sorry, Dawn.
It's all right. It's a rule in the house.
That was a totally different show. Yeah.
I break it sometimes.
That was a totally different show.
See, you get a dog. Yeah.
But it was a totally different show.
I didn't know that.
It had nothing to do with that show.
All right, which show was, not which show was better, but which show did you like better?
Yeah, which one did you like better?
I like the intimacy. of the first show that I saw.
Right.
I thought it was really entertaining, but the second show, I mean, you have the whole screen behind you, and I felt like it was a history lesson for me. I learned a lot more in that show than history class.
But what about the first show? It was all that economic shit, wasn't it?
Economic.
Wasn't it sad?
Cool.
Did you think it was sad? Yeah, it was supposed to be funny, but it was sad.
Well, it's economics. How funny can you make fucking...
But it wasn't like economics, like right. The shit. It wasn't like a lesson, right? It was more like just how we've gone from being workers, like from when we came over.
All right, now she's in the podcast. Okay, we get it.
Thanks, Dawn.
It was cool.
Okay.
I liked it.
Okay.
It's like watching Raging Bull. He's like, okay, honey, don't let him influence you. You want a hamburger, you get a hamburger. Give me a burger. Get her a hamburger.
Well, you actually helped me write. You really tried to get me to be a writer on the show.
That's right.
You pushed and pushed and pushed me.
Yeah.
To, you know, write this, write that. You had me write out, like, jokes, you know, scenes, sketches after sketch after sketch. I wrote 100 sketches.
I remember that.
And I handed them in, and I never heard anything back. But here's the funny thing.
You never heard anything back?
Here's what's funny about that, is I saw actually some of my ideas on the show.
What?
Not joking.
You trying to say they were stolen?
I'm not saying they were stolen, and I'm not saying they were the exact idea, but there were similar ideas that would pop up on the show that I submitted, because I submitted, I don't know, let's say 50... To be realistic, 50 sketch ideas, which you kept telling me to do.
Yeah.
And then actually, yes, a couple of them actually, I was like, dude, and that could be total coincidence because, you know, look, there's other guys writing all day too. I mean, it's not unlikely that someone's going to come up with the same idea, but I saw a couple, and it's like, here's a stack of papers, a stack of ideas, 4 shows a week, every week.
Right.
And there's a stack of ideas on some dude's table somewhere.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never can put it past. Hey, look, it happens all the time on those. And like you said, where it happens the most is on those daily shows. And a lot of times it's a coincidence. Daily shows, people have a million ideas. And a lot of times people are just like, I haven't got nothing on in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, that used to happen on SNL.
Really?
How many guys would complain, hey, man, that was my fucking guy I used to do my act sometimes. You know what I mean?
People did that?
Yeah. I heard that a few times where they're like, hey, that's from my thing. And you'd be like, I don't know if it's true. But then again, the other side of it is, I remember when I went to SNL, so a friend of mine, her brother had sent me some idea about a sketch that was kind of like an Italian version of, remember the Homeboy Shopping Network?
Yeah.
On Living Color?
Yeah.
It was like that with Italian. So he'd send me to me, you know, I wasn't on SNL at the time. Then I was on SNL, and they had the Joe Pesci show, Jim Brewer.
Right.
I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't one of the writers on it.
Right.
But it was the same set in that, oh, here we are in a warehouse, just right. Like a mob, you know?
Yeah.
So this girl tried to call me. I didn't call her back just because I was running around, whatever. So she and her brother were like, he really did. Why wouldn't he call me back? He stole our goddamn idea.
Wow.
She figured I stole the fucking idea. And it looks suspicious. And her brother's like, I'm sure to this day, he thinks I took his idea.
That's fucked up.
So, I mean, that does happen too, both ways. But you never know. It does happen the other way too. There's people that get desperate in places like SNL. You lose your job if you don't come up with ideas. So when your job is on the line, don't you think if you can't think of things, you're going to grab somebody's shit? Man, of course.
I wouldn't. Have you ever done it?
No.
Never.
Never.
Because
I've never done it.
Yeah.
There was an episode of SNL that was you on Opie and Anthony.
All right. Listen, Dawn, I'm getting to it.
Oh, wow.
I'm getting to it. You think? What do you think? I don't know my life.
What?
I didn't know what I didn't forget. No fucking talking on the podcast.
So you like the economic shows?
Shut your face. Shut the fuck up, both of you.
So go ahead.
Well, we did a thing. I brought up Larry the Cable Guy, who I think is, you know, he's a great guy. I don't give a shit what he does. Whatever.
Dan Whitney, I know him from day one.
Right, he's not that redneck guy. That's a character.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think that's him. get her done. And then when they hear him on it, you know, sometimes they catch him going, hey, how are you? And he's just a regular dude that used to wear polo shirts and Dockers on stage.
I told you, he used to make me cry. He was funny.
Yeah, he's funny. He's a funny guy. He came up with this character for radio. Yeah. So Anthony was
By the way, I tried to get him on the radio when I was in Albany about 10 years ago. I tried to get him. He called on the radio. I knew him as Dan Whitney. I said, can I have his number? I tried to get his number. They didn't have it. Because I was going to call him up and go, Dan, that character is funny. Do it in, like, sparely. Don't do it too often because you'll overdo it. Just do it in your act. Don't do it as a full character. Just do it once in a while.
Wow.
I would have cost him $200 million.
Yeah, well.
Thank God I couldn't get him on the phone.
Yeah. That says something right there.
Yeah, it sure does. But go ahead.
You should listen to Larry and start listening to yourself.
Yes, you're right. But so Anthony's there.
So Anthony starts trashing him. You know, fuck that, fuck that. Right. And I was talking about, look, in the state of comedy right now,
right.
You need a character. Look at all the famous people. They're either a race or a character.
That's right.
Okay, which gives you a people.
Yeah.
Once you get the people, all you need is like a catchphrase.
That's right.
Or like a thing that you do,
yeah.
Which is, you know, his get her done. So we came up with Billy the Bass Man for me.
Oh, yeah, you too.
Where I go on and my thing was, where are we going?
Right, right.
So I would go up and I would go, yeah, my grandmother has two thumbs and one hand. She makes a great pot crust. Where are we going? And people still yell it out on stage once. Actually, a comic sent me a video. He was on stage 36 seconds into his set. Someone yelled, after one of his jokes, you heard in the crowd, where are we going? I guarantee if I wanted to, right now, I could fucking do that character. Sit down with maybe another comic or something, write a bunch of jokes,
right.
And put where we're going. And I guarantee you, within 5 years, any truck stop or gas station from here to fucking the Mississippi would have where we go in fucking hats and t-shirts. And I would be a millionaire. I'd be a fucking millionaire. It's always better when you don't yawn at the end of a fucking long story.
But what's the SNL?
The fuck?
Tell me the SNL part.
Well, a week later, SNL had a skit on that was basically comics, you know, the black guy, the fat comic, and he had his little, he was the fat guy, but he had his saying. They had the black comic with his saying, all these different comics with their sayings, basically the same exact shit.
Right, right, right.
Which is, you know, what we talked about on O&A.
Yeah.
All a comic needs is a fucking people and a catchphrase.
Right, right.
And that's all, the whole skit was people and a catchphrase. Black guy, fat guy, skinny guy, fucking blah, whatever. And they all had catchphrases. And, you know, right. They do it, and that was the whole thing. And it's like, I got so many emails, like, dude, they fucking stole
right. The
idea. And it's like, look, some guy listening to Opie and Anthony, a writer coming into work at SNL, yeah, why the fuck not? Who gives a fuck, by the way? You know, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it.
Nah, there's nothing you can do about it, but because you can never prove it. But you know what? Who gives a fuck? It would be great if the guy was like, dude, I heard that on O&A.
Right.
Give you credit. That'd be a nice pat on the
sure.
back. To be. But you can't do that because then you're a fucking thief and you run the risk of, you know,
yeah,
getting in trouble. But, you know, I don't really give a fuck because it's just whatever, but... It's, you know, I'm sitting there watching it like, wow, that's very, very fucking similar, but just different enough to where you're like, it's not, if it was Billy the Bass Man or a country guy going, where are we going? There you go.
Of course.
But they switched it up just enough. But
of
who
course
knows?
It did.
99% chance it didn't even have, they weren't even know.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing about the whole thing is you never know for sure. Like you said, you can't prove anything, and that's the worst part.
Well, that's why I like comedy. It's like, I don't do topical shit. I don't give a fuck. I don't care about the economy. I don't care about the world. I don't really give a shit about the government or the country or other countries or, you know, I don't give a fuck. Maybe I will later in life. I'll start caring more and start talking about it or what it affects me. You know, I care about being at TJ Maxx today, and now that they've pray against weak, depressed people like me, because the line into the cash register is all just rows and rows of gotsy little fucking shit that I want to buy it all.
Oh.
It's
the upstairs cash register or the front?
The upstairs, where you go. Now I know Marshalls and every fucking store knows that we're just fat fucking pieces of shit trying to fucking buy an something that says $50 and then has a red tag that says $7.99. I have to get that.
Right.
Because it's $7.99.
That's right.
It's a red tag. It was $50. Right. And you can't, you're in the, that shit bugs me, but I could give a fuck about the economy. But like you, it's fucking amazing to me that you can take the shit that we all know about or don't know about the world. I don't understand. I don't think people know how hard it is to write original jokes about shit that's going on now and have them be so personal and original that, you know, other people can't take them. Because, look, I did a joke about Osama bin Laden. You know, they're going to have Osama. He's making all these videotapes.
I remember this.
Yeah, Daryl Hammond's favorite joke, by the way. They're going to have Osama bloopers.
Right.
And I turned on BET one night, and five other black comics have that joke.
All kind of shit. He's making all kind of video.
Yeah.
They're going to have a blooper reel.
Yeah.
For real, y'all.
No. All right. A medical must.
No, they have to sit. No, they set it up for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
For real. But I mean bloopers. He's got too many videos. They're going to have a blooper reel for real. I'm not playing.
I give you like 10 enthusiastic endorsements before they start.
It's fucking a Baptist church.
Yeah,
that's what it is. They're selling Jesus. Jesus is the shit. He's the shit. I'm telling you, Jesus is. I'm telling you,
Obama all over. Osama's all over the place. I see his video everywhere.
But it's you know, when I watched your play, first of all, I go to you have your play. I talk to you all the time. You're one of my favorite people, one of my closest friends. I see you very rarely, but, you know, we're comics. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't even fucking affect us, you know? But your play comes out. I say to my wife, I want to go see Colin's play, and I want to buy the tickets. I want to buy really good seats.
Which, by the way, is almost unheard of in the comedy community.
Absolutely.
I was shocked and flattered. I'm so happy, but
oh, absolutely
unheard of in the comedy community.
A
comedian will make 20 phone calls to make sure that he does not have to purchase a ticket.
They want to walk up to Will Call and get their fucking I mean, if Norton had to pay for a fucking ticket,
he'd be home every night.
Yeah, Norton's seen every play in theater.
He's on the first row
right now. Yeah,
he's been to every play, and he doesn't own a tie. He doesn't own a college shirt.
He owns a fucking Black Sabbath shirt.
He owns a Black Sabbath shirt. Yeah. He wears it to everything.
Well, I buy the tickets, $150 each, $300. That's $300.
I know. But wait, before you continue, let me say one thing about Norton.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than a short-haired Black Sabbath t-shirt wearer. If you wear a Black Sabbath t-shirt and you have long, stringy hair, that looks all right.
Yeah.
A creep with short hair and a Black Sabbath t-shirt does not look good.
That's true. Yes, it's a reformed Black Sabbath.
It's just horrendous. Yeah. But go ahead. So you spend
$300. I don't even call you.
I know.
I don't call you.
I know. I didn't know you were coming.
You know why I didn't call you? Because I don't want you to be like, dude, don't do that.
Right.
I want to just show up and be there for you.
I know.
I
want to
just go. And I don't want to go backstage. I don't want
to. We went to our backstage, John's.
Well, right. I called you, said, look, we're in John's Pizza. Oh, God, how good was John's? And there's nothing better when you walk over right after a play and you fold up a slice and stick it down your...
Oh,
So good. So I buy the tickets. I show up. I see you. Hey, whatever. We go to John's after. You're shooting an HBO special.
Right.
And I get an email from your assistant. What's her name?
Claire.
And it says, Colin would like to know if you want to go to the show, the taping, one of the tapings. He'd like to make sure you have tickets. I'm like, well, that's fucking cool, man. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking cool. Yeah, I'd like to go. I already saw it. I'd like to see it again, but I'd like to be there to say that I was there for that taping.
Support your friend.
Be there. Yep, I would. So I tell Dawn, and Dawn's excited, and we go down. And in my head, I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. literally do. I do fantasies in my head for good stuff too. Sometimes it's violent, bad, fucking crazy shit.
Right.
But sometimes I fantasize like you know, I had a fantasy of walking in and getting the you know the will call, but it's a kind of a bigger envelope because there's laminates in there. There's like VIP passes because sometimes when I do shows, like I did a show, the guy came last week. My uncle, I made sure that he had laminates to get backstage to meet Leary and everybody after the show. So there was you know second row, and then they had the passes that they can use to come backstage, so they can meet everybody and say hi. And they were you know VIP you know special. So I'm walking in like I'm gonna you know get that you know because I didn't ask I mean
right.
I get the tickets just the tickets I'm like all right whatever you know no pass maybe there's no passes maybe they don't have maybe this is theater I don't know
right
and I'm walking up to the thing with my wife who looks fucking beautiful by the way really dolled up we both dressed up a little bit we're going in and I'm expecting the lady to go oh Mr. Kelly and come here Mr. Kelly and bring us right down to the front row. Second row maybe and sit there and maybe call you know hey Mr. Quinn said after the show please wait by this door you can we'd like you to come back for the after party taping party you know to meet everybody I can't delay to the tickets she doesn't even look up at me she pushes her glasses back on her face yeah right into the left I'm like excuse me right into the left right here just go through the door right in the back the second to last row. So I'm kind of with my wife. My heart. It wasn't an anger. It was a hurt. It was a hurting pain. Oh. And I walk in, and I'm kind of biting my lip, and I'm taking deep breaths because it hurts. It's like you know your girl's cheating on you, but you can't. You know, and you find out, and that first moment you find out. And I walk in, I sit down, and then behind me was fucking the Rat Pack or the Whack Pack from Howard Stern, or Opie and Anthony, Twitchells and Levy and all these other, some guy with a fucking, one eye was bigger than the other, and this guy has Tourette's, and my wife looks like a million fucking bucks, and I'm in front of that, I'm worried that this guy's going to spit gum in her hair, and, and then I look in front of me, and there's a camera, a camera guy, in front of me. So I actually
no, right in front of you,
right in front of me. There's a camera with a guy, and I can't really see. So I literally have to look into his lens to see the show. And if I was fucking, I was the anger. I wish I was angry. I wish it was anger. It was hurt. It was hurt, and then it came into rage. And the only thing that actually kept me there, the only thing, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed because God forbid a fan, an Opie and Anthony fan, or what, if they walked in and walked past me. To get to their seats.
Oh.
A lady walks up. We need four people who want to sit up front. My hand shot up. Don's like, what are we doing? I go, come on. And I got up front seats to your fucking show. By luck.
Could have been worse. You could have been Nick DiPaolo.
Why?
He was in the balcony. In the last row of the balcony.
Who the fuck is your assistant?
Yeah, and I fucked up. It wasn't my assistant's fault, by the way. I called out the...
It doesn't matter. It's her fault. I'll tell you why it's her fault. Want me to tell you why it's her fault?
Yes.
Because she should know better. You don't get fucking back row shit seats
we
and go...
Got, she got pit. She should have known better, but the passive-aggressive theater manager...
Yeah.
I actually called her out the next day. I go, what did you do? My family and friends... Well, scattered all over, but my family, the same thing happened. And they were there too. I go, my family and friends. She goes, oh, I just got every tickets for everybody who's going to be there. Everybody just got random tickets. I go, right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm complaining about. And she's like, oh, and she didn't even fucking apologize. I go, you telling me that you, I said, do you understand what happened? And she goes, oh, yeah. And then finally the next day she came and she's like, I'm sorry. But I could tell she didn't mean, she was just I wanted to kill her for that, but it was too late. There's nothing I could do. But can you imagine that? She actually comes to me and doesn't even apologize. She goes, oh, she just told me what I knew already happened. I said, that's what I'm complaining about, right? That you just randomly picked my family and friends, got all shit seats. You know what I mean? And by the way, for all that randomness, I noticed the HBO guests were in fucking decent rows, like the people from Boardwalk Empire and all of them. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just
which is fine.
I still get mad thinking about it.
Which is fine.
But it is a funny story. But I love the fact that Twitchell's was back there with Bob Levy.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Oh my God. Unfucking believable. Well, I was so mad, dude.
I don't blame you.
I was disgusted. The fact is that I already bought the tickets.
I know. You know.
Yeah. But what are you going to do? So, anyways, dude, you're going to be up in Montreal this week.
Yes.
You're doing your show two nights.
Yeah.
What nights?
Friday and Saturday.
Friday, Saturday. You're doing your show. I'm doing my show.
What nights are you doing? Monday through?
Tuesday through Saturday. We're doing Cheat live. Which is, you know, like, you know.
You, Billy, and Joe?
Me, Billy, Joe. We got our actually cool video that's going up at the beginning of the show.
And you guys
going
to be in stand-up?
We're going to do stand-up. We've got to think of some theme shit or try to do some weird shit. We put a video together. It's, you know that song, My Guy?
Yeah.
My Guy. And it just has images of all the people that have cheated, like Schwarzenegger and Brett Favre and... And then
that's great.
The video comes in, and it's just such a beautiful song about how she supports her guy and my guy.
Yeah.
She's there, and then it just shows these guys. And then the video comes up where it's like Clinton, halfway through the song, it's like Clinton goes, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. And then it goes right to the one, I did have sexual relations. And then it goes to Brett Favre, I'm retiring. And then it goes to Wiener. And then the last clip is Tiger Woods just staring at the camera, and he goes, I'm so sorry.
Ugh.
And he bows his head. But and then Joe's going out, he's hosting it, and I'm going up in the middle, Billy's going up at the end, and we all kind of hit the cheat stuff a little differently. I'm from a married point of view. Where
then you could have in the middle of the line, he may not be a movie star, and then My Guy song, and then show images of you three.
That's true. We could do that. We're actually doing a show at a strip club across the street from Club Soda, Cleopatra.
You are?
Yeah.
It's fucking cool. What time is it?
It's cool. It's cool. But Big Jay Oakerson has his own show, his own one-man show, I guess, before us, which takes away some of the fucking fun.
Oh, of course.
But it's at 10:30 at night, every night.
Oh, I can come to it.
Yeah, it's going to be...
It's after my show.
Yeah, it should be good. So
be great.
We're doing that, and then I'm doing a gala, but... This is funny. I'm doing a relationship show, but with food. So it's basically... That's what I was working on tonight is trying to do the food stuff.
Yeah.
Tonight.
You got some funny food shit.
I got some good food stuff. I got some... The cheat stuff is pretty good. That worked out. I did that thing about my wife. I told you that joke about...
Yeah, you told me.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if she heard it.
The one, yeah. Well, that's the
she
one.
She might smash you in the face if
one,
she doesn't.
The one joke she said to me, B, can you not? She's never told me not to say anything. Because, I mean, look around.
I know.
I bought this with jokes. That's my thing. I go, you like that cable? You like that bill being paid? Then shit your face. No, but that was the one joke that she told me not to say. But I think I made it funny enough to that she thinks it's funny now.
Nobody's going to remember the details. I mean, sitting on a rock.
The rock.
No, it wasn't supposed to be discussed. In one day, we're in the car with his older sister. And we drive by the area, and he says it out loud. And I was just mortified. So I think from that point, it really didn't matter if he said it from stage.
I forgot we were in the car with my little sister. And it's literally this little strip of beach in Marblehead where I took her on the first...
Marblehead's nice.
I've
never been there, but everybody says it's nice.
Well, it's just rocks and a little tiny beach. And I took her there, and down the street was a little, like a little ice cream place, just white, you know, vanilla and chocolate. That's all you could get. But I didn't have any money. So I used to, you know, take girls down to Marblehead because it was fancy. My mom lived down there. But, you know, I took her over to the... ice cream place, and then The Rock. She made it to The Rock.
The Rock.
And we wound up, you know, that's where I did my sexy vampire shit back in the day. Because I had the hair. I know, good looking. And we made out, and then she, we had, and she fucking.
But you're talking like you, this was your thing. Like you took other girls.
Oh. I took other girls there.
Oh, this is all new.
Oh, this is another podcast.
Hang on. I never took girls for ice cream and The Rock.
First, you never.
All right, Colin, it was nice having you on
this is nice. The last podcast I actually got to be involved in. Now I do understand why you didn't want her talking during this podcast.
You understand?
Yes. It's going to be a long night after I leave this house, I'll tell you. Not for me, for these two.
Anyways, dude, it's fucking...
Thanks, buddy. I love you.
I love you too, man. This is like the calmest podcast we've ever done.
I know.
We usually fight each other.
I know.
We usually beat each other up.
Yeah.
And we didn't this time.
No, we didn't.
I really want to smack you in the face right now, though.
Well, I have a bad shoulder, or I'd feel the same way.
Right. I didn't want to, but... Then when I talked about it,
yeah,
how we usually fight each other,
it brings up, I know,
it brought up the just crack them,
the
right
fun
now. Yeah, the fun of just smacking. And then
the last time we had an umbrella fight.
Yeah,
last time I was over.
You had the fucking gay Japanese 12-year-old girl umbrella. It's the umbrella that is clear and goes over you like a dome.
Oh yeah. It's a very safe umbrella. I bought it. It's fucking efficient.
But, next week, or whatever, you're going to be in Montreal. But actually, check out his Twitter, too, because he's just a fucking awesome, just annoy everybody. I am Colin Quinn.
It's true. If you want to get some real, sincere, clean, good times in these decadent times we live in, check in with me on Twitter. Although lately, I haven't been on the past few days.
It's all right. Well, the fact that people don't get that you're being a sarcastic fucking douche cunt
better.
Intentionally,
yeah,
and they're taking you serious, it just, they should die.
I lose as many as I get, yeah. We've decided, we'll talk about that next time, and I'm going to kill some of these tweet fucking...
We'll talk about that next time. But, dude, it was an interesting conversation. Thanks for coming on. I am Colin Quinn, at I am Colin Quinn on Twitter, and he's up in Montreal, and thanks again, bro.
Thanks, brother.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of You Know What Dude podcast on gloryholeradio.com. And make sure to check out all the other shows on the Glory Hole Network. If you're using the Stitcher app, type in the word fart when you register. iTunes users, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. If you're a real fan of the show and you want to show your support, go to gloryholeradio.com/Robert Kelly and hit the donate button. $10 will get you a shout out on the air. $20 will get you my first CD, Robert Kelly Live, not available in stores. If you have any questions, email me at robertkelly@gloryholeradio.com.